to the Inspired Women podcast, where your hosts connect you with inspirational women from around the globe and chat about topics relevant to today's modern woman. Here are your hosts.
Hi, my name is Megan Hall. I am the founder of Megan Hall Motivation. I help women manage their chaos and create the life that they want to live. And I'm here today with my BFF and co-host, Jules.
Good morning. I'm Jules. I am the owner of Julie Clyde Creative. I'm a boutique branding company that creates design and marketing solutions for female entrepreneurs. And I am here today to interview Megan. So it's her turn for episode two. A little bit of background about Megan. I met her through a Business Among Mums catch up here in Virginia Beach. And we both were quite nervous about what we were doing and where we were sitting and not knowing anyone in the room. And as I said in episode one, I was determined that she was going to be my friend. So then when I met her again at Modern Femme Convention in May this year, we hit it off again and we're inseparable from there. So I'm really excited. I know your background and I know your history, but I'm really excited for you to share that with everybody today.
Yay! Okay, well, share my background. It's long. I'm only 30 years old, but sometimes when I tell my life story, people are just like, really? Is that even possible for like a 30-year-old to have done or like been through all that? I don't want to say done all that, been through all that, but it is possible. But we would be talking literally on this podcast for like 5 hours if we went into detail about everything. But I will start with what brought me to where what I'm doing today with helping women is I had a long struggle with depression as far back as I could remember. As a child, I remember like just wanting to stow away places and read my book, and I didn't want anybody to talk to me. I remember not wanting to get out of bed and struggling with all of these feelings that kept dragging me down all the time. And I didn't know who I was. I was one of those people that always wanted to make everybody happy, and I wanted to heal them all. And I wanted everybody to love me, and I just wanted to fit in. So I struggled with fitting in because I felt like I needed to be everything everybody wanted me to be versus who I was, because who would really like me for me? And this struggle really took a turn for the worse when my parents divorced when I was 13. It was hard because in my entire 13 years of life, as much as that seems like a small time, when you're a child and you grow up and all your friends' parents are divorcing and they're split up, but you're the one that has your parents together. And then at 13, or right before I turned 13, they decide they don't want to be together. Now, I'm not saying they were happy and that there was like any shock that they didn't want to be together, but it was kind of crazy. And then we moved to Florida. I didn't know anybody there, and I just wanted everybody to like me and accept me. So I pretended to like and do things that I wasn't really into, and I struggled to figure out who I was. That was the first time that I attempted suicide, was when I was 13. One of my friends stopped me, and I'm very grateful for that because it was a scary place to be. And that was first of several times I attempted suicide in my life. And it's such a dark thing to think of, because when you meet me nowadays, I'm so positive and happy and bubbly. It's just kind of crazy to think that I was in that dark place several times like that. But that started the downfall of me and not knowing who I was, because I continued to try to fit in. I gave birth to my daughter at 16 years old. I had her, like, I turned 17 a couple months after she was born. So I tell people, I'm like, I was technically 17. it doesn't make it any better.
Yeah, but it depends whose eyes you're looking through when you say that too. Because Carmel is a pretty special kid. Like, you've raised an amazing kid.
She is a very special nut. She gives me a run for my money. But I grew up with people judging me for being a teen mom. And then I got into college, a very nice college. And I still to this day, I'm like, I was just an idiot for dropping out. But it's in the past and it's okay. I was going through a lot of stuff at the time. But I got introduced to the bar scene. And I suddenly had all of these friends. And it was so exciting because I'm like, oh, look, all these friends I never had before. I only had those friends because I was the drunk chick you could tell stories about. Like, I would do ridiculous things.
We need to have a bar story podcast, because I was that girl as well. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Oh, yes. We could totally... We'll do a podcast in the future on Jules and Megan and bar stories. So I just wanted to fit in. I'd pretend to be something I wasn't. I'd drink to extremes and still struggling with depression. And as anybody knows, alcohol is a depressant. So if you're depressed and then you're drinking all the time, that just makes it a lot worse. Mm. I ended up meeting a man when I was, I wouldn't say man, we were both like barely adults at the time. When I was in college, he delivered food, and he was super cute. He had this hat he'd always wear. Now I look at it, I'm like, I don't like that hat anymore. But he had beautiful blue eyes, and I thought I could save him. Because when I met him, I was just like, wow, this is somebody who needs me. This is somebody who needs me.
And that's I can save somebody.
But I met him, and I thought I could save him. You know, he was cute and he was kind of dangerous. And I was like, oh, he needs me so bad. And he played on that. He knew that I thought I could save him. And so suddenly I would get phone calls like, I'm really depressed today. I don't know how I'm going to go on. I need you. So I'd be skipping school. And that started with me just skipping like one class or one day. To where I was no longer attending classes, and now I'm an adult. I could have totally made the decision to not skip class, but I did. And then I was flunking out. And then I decided that my relationship with this man, and he needed me so bad that I was just going to completely drop out of college. Like, I was not going to go anymore. My final semester of college. Thank you, $50,000 in student loans. Still paying. You live and you learn. But yep. I met him, and he had a drug and alcohol addiction. It was bad. It was bad. And we split up multiple occasions, not just because of his addiction problems, but how he treated me. He was verbally abusive. And towards the end, it just got progressively worse. And I'm not going to go into a whole diatribe, and we can totally make a podcast another time about my relationship with him and what I went through. But in the end, he shot off a gun in my house, and they went on a one-hour manhunt for him. My daughter came running across, and this gives me chills every time I say it. My daughter came running across from the neighbors and said, I thought he killed you. And that made me realize that I was not the only one that was witnessing how he was treating me, but my daughter was also witnessing that as well. And I found myself homeless with two kids to take care of, no job, no car, no license, because by that point in time, I had allowed our relationship to consume me so much that I completely lost who I was. I was devastated. I had no self-esteem. I'm like, how will anybody ever love this hot mess? I'm going to be a single mom of two girls for the rest of my life. Nobody's ever going to want me. And that was completely wrong, because within a couple months, I met my husband.
I was going to say, and he's pretty awesome.
He's pretty awesome. I'm a very lucky woman, so I just need to try to keep him.
Yeah, but there was a lot of growth and change that's happened since you've met him, too.
Yes, absolutely. The first 3 years of our marriage, it was awful. I don't know why he didn't divorce me. He really should have divorced me. But he said he never thought about it. He knew that there was a good person inside of me. So we did. I 3 years into our marriage, I thought that if I lost all of the weight, because I was quite overweight, if I lost all the weight and I just worked out, I would be happy and I would feel good and everything would be all right. And I forgot that there was a whole other part of me that needed to be worked on as well, my mental and my emotional health. Completely did not think about that. And I ended up with my final suicide attempt standing in my shower crying. I had a plan. We had pills. My husband takes so many pills for like all these different aches and pains he has. I could easily overdose on anything in our cabinet. And that was my plan. And I just remember him stopping and looking at me in the shower, and not in a way you want your husband to look at you in the shower, but looking at me and saying, Megan, you need to get help. We need you here, because I was like, I can't do this anymore. You'd be much better off without me. And that's when people say suicide is a selfish thing. It's really not. People are doing it because they think the world's going to be better off without them. And that's what I truly, honestly thought that would. But they wouldn't have. I mean, who could live without me?
I was going to say, I'm really glad that you failed every time. But the things that you could fail at in life, that is the one that I'm most proud of you for failing at.
So I went and I saw a counselor. And I started working on me. And then I discovered Beachbody. Beachbody coaching, if anybody's not familiar with it, they help you find the workout programs that work best for you and provide you support via an accountability group, which is how that's supposed to go. And sometimes you'll meet people that don't actually do that, but they say they're a Beachbody coach, so they're just selling you stuff. Those aren't the right kind of coaches. There's some good ones out there. I know them. They're really awesome people. And I really enjoyed Beachbody coaching. And I enjoyed the camaraderie. I enjoyed, you know, how I felt like I was a part of something bigger than myself. And if I had never got introduced to it, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. I realized that there was a disconnect between my clients through Beachbody and what I really wanted to see in their lives, which was creating a lifestyle, feeling happy and creating this lifestyle that they would thrive. And that wasn't happening. They would lose the weight and then gain it back and then lose the weight and still be unhappy and their whole life's a hot mess. I'm not saying all of them, but a good portion. You know, I'm still working with people today that I was working with 2 years ago. There's a problem when you don't outgrow me. Like, there's a problem. Even with what I do now, there's a problem if you don't outgrow me. Like, where you don't need to hire me. Yeah, I'm sure you're still going to want me in your life because I'm super awesome.
I mean, yes.
But there's a huge problem if you don't outgrow what I have to offer. With Beachbody, they weren't outgrowing me. They were continuing to have to lose the same weight over and over and over again. And that's because I realized that instead of focusing on their entire life, we were just focusing on this little tiny sliver.
Yeah.
I mean, self-care and taking care of your health, yes, that's a huge, crucial piece of the component of having the life you want to live. Because if you feel like crap, the rest of your life's going to eventually turn like crap. That's just how it goes. No question about it. But there's also, what do your relationships look like? You know, how are you providing for your family? Are you? It's okay to be a stay-at-home mom. But if you're providing for your family and you totally hate your job and every day you're so angry because you're going to the same job every day, that's going to bleed into the rest of your life. You know, is your relationship, when I say relationships, I don't mean just with your spouse. I mean with your family, your friends. What's your community look like? Like, how are you waking up in the morning? Are you waking up and the first thing you're doing is checking your phone because you have to know what somebody emailed you or what's on social media? I tell my clients, don't do that. I want the first 15 minutes of your day, at least, to be for you.
You just totally just talked about me just then. My first 15 minutes of the day, I wake Taylor up to get her to school, and then I will go and sit on the side of the bed and I'll check email and I'll check work, and that's my first thing of the day. But like, you, every day.
That means you're putting other people's needs before yourself.
Yeah, but that's part of my like self-sabotaging thing. I have the good girl social conditioning. If I'm doing the right thing by others, I'm being a good girl and I'm being a good person. And it was actually really painful. The group mentoring program that I'm currently in, they did meeting your limitations and getting rid of them. And every single thing that they talked about, I was like, ow, that hurts. Ow, that's me. I don't like this. And it was like excuses, and it was self-sabotage, and it was this good girl mentality, and it was your cultural conditioning and how you've been brought up and how that actually plays out in the rest of your life. And I still haven't finished my homework for that week because I keep looking at it going, I don't want to play with that at the minute. It's like, I'm busy, so I can't look at it, but I actually really need to sit down and do that. But my, when you're talking about weight loss, up until May, I think it was, we, Chris and I lost a heap of weight like earlier on in this year, and I actually managed to keep it off up until recently when I had to go and get medical things done, whereas he put it all back on again. And he's saying to me, you know, why have you kept it off and I haven't? And I said to him, because I had Megan on board. I said, she was the one that was saying to me, what would your life look like if you didn't go and have Chick-fil-A with the kids? Or how do you feel when you don't have crap food? And that always plays in my head now. So I may have a bowl of chips now, but it's very rarely. It's not all the time. And if I do it, I put it into a bowl and it's a small handful for me rather than the whole bag, which is what Chris and I were doing. So it's been like really interesting sitting back. And I'm now 38 pounds down.
Yay!
Which is awesome.
I have a problem with chips too. They cannot be in my house because I won't do a bowl. I will eat the whole bag. It's going down.
They sing to me.
They sing to me. I know they're here. My husband one time, right before he left on his deployment, which by the time you guys hear this, he will be back. But right now, woo-hoo, he's gone. So we have this tall cabinet in our kitchen that I have to get a step stool to reach the top shelf, so I never put anything up there because I'm too lazy. I'm not going to get out the step stool. It just doesn't happen. I can actually say that. Like, there's certain things that I know just won't happen.
Hashtag so, short person problems.
Yes. So I look and I notice something's up there and I said, honey, what's up on the top shelf of this cabinet? And he said, oh, chips. And I was like, you know how I am about chips. He said, oh yeah, that's why they're up there. And I said, what do you mean? He said, because I know you have to get out the step stool and climb up there and grab them. And by the time you get up there, if you even take out the step stools, because let's be honest, you're probably not going to. By the time you get up there, you will have realized that you should not touch those chips and get back down. Especially because they're my chips, not yours. He was right. I didn't touch them because I just didn't want to take out the damn step stool. But they don't come in the house because I do. I will eat the entire bag of chips. It's just not, there's no moderation. But I'm a strong believer in moderation. I love pizza and I will eat some pizza, but I don't have pizza every day or even every week. I might have it once a month. I love wine, but I have to make a solid, like,
yeah,
plan about wine. Because if I go into a party and I'm just like, I'm going to drink some wine. But if I go into a party and I say, I'm just going to have two glasses of wine, then I just have two glasses and I'm good to go. I have to have a solid plan when it comes to wine, especially because when I was early in college, I probably had alcohol problems. And I know that I can easily revert back to that, especially if we start shot. Jager bombs are my downfall because, yes, I tell my clients that we have a habit. Like, my whole goal is to help my clients create habits and routines because I saw with my Beachbody coaching, they weren't creating the habits and routines that they really needed in life. With my clients now, I teach them how to create those habits and routines, the ones that work for them. Because what works for me is not going to work for you or your mom or my sister or anybody like that. It's what works best for us each individually. So when it comes to Jager bombs, I'm on a habit loop. Because forever, for years, if I did Jager bombs, I was blacking out that night. The end. No questions about it. So my habit now is my brain says, Jager bombs? Yeah, we're getting drunk tonight. That's exactly what happens. So I cannot do Jager bombs. I tell people I'm allergic now. Because if I do, I know that it doesn't matter how much I know about breaking bad. So you don't break bad habits. You replace them with good habits. There is no good habit that's going to replace doing Jager bombs. Besides just not doing them.
They were my favorite thing to make when I was a bartender. So how did you get around to Megan Hall motivation?
Like I said, I was seeing that disconnect with my Beachbody clients. And I was like, I feel like I'm meant for something more than this. Not that there's anything wrong with Beachbody coaching. I know people who make mad cash and do amazing things with Beachbody coaching because they're lit up by it. They feel like that's something that fulfills them. For me, there was a missing link. Like, it fulfilled me some, but not enough. So I said to my friend Casey, who will be a future podcast guest on this podcast, she, I said to her, I said, I feel like I'm meant for something more. She's like, that's great, because I've felt like that about you for a while. And I was like, awesome. So we sat down and she's like, what do you like to do? And I was like, I rock at talking to people.
Yes, you do.
Why do you think we have a podcast? Because I rock at talking to people. So I said to her, I'm like, I rock at talking to people. I really like connecting with them. And I like to save people. I like to help them, you know, navigate what's going on. And I want them to create create a happy, healthy, thriving life. That was the beginning of what I, like, my messaging. Was, yeah. I just wanted people to feel good. And I wanted to help them get there. And I knew the different, because I'd already done it. I mean, I'd already done it myself. The different things you need to do to help you live that life that you want to live. I'm not saying my life's perfect. Nobody's life is perfect. It's not going to happen. But if 95% of the time I'm happy and I feel good, then I'm doing something right. And yep. I want to teach people how to do that too. And she said, you know, you'd be a really good coach, maybe personal trainer. But I recently asked that. I don't like personal training. And it doesn't fit with my messaging because it's not one size. You know, it's not, it can be molded to people, but not everybody needs personal training. You know, I asked that. But personal training was on the board at that time. And she's like, you'd be a really good speaker too. So I went to Modern Femme with this idea that I wanted to be a speaker and I wanted to be a coach. And I had no idea what that looked like. I was just like, oh my gosh. So I did one coaching corner with Kelly Ruda, who like called me out on my BS and was like, listen, why are you not doing this? I'm like, don't I need to do this, this, and this, and this first? And she's like, no, just start doing it. Tell people you're a speaker. Tell people that you're a coach. Start getting together some packages. It'll come. But if you wait until you have all those things, you'll be waiting forever.
Yes.
I was like, oh, that's legit. And literally, I booked my first speaking engagement at Modern Femme with Jules.
Yes, you did.
And then booked my second one 2 days later, speaking at Modern Femme next year, 2017. Yeah, so when you guys hear this, it will be 2017. It's May 5th through the 7th of 2017, I believe. And I will be speaking there. Jules will be there also. So come check us out. Attend. You can...
I was going to say, and all my pretty design stuff.
Yeah, Jules is the branding strategist for Modern Femme. So all of her prettiness will be there. And if you come, you'll hear amazing speakers. Check them out, modernfemme.com. So Femme is F-E-M-M-E. But definitely check it out. Come join us. But I went there, and then I was so hyped up after that. I went to the coach's corner, and I'm like, who's available? Let's do this. I'm ready. I need more kicking in my butt. And Rachel Scott.
I love Rachel. She's amazing.
It's like, we sat down and she's like, so why? And why? She kept asking me why. And I'm like, I don't know. Stop asking why.
Yeah. She has some really, like, if you read them on a piece of paper, they don't mean much. But when she asks you that question, she can, like, bore into your soul and literally say, so how does that look for you? You go, I don't know.
That's how I was. And I basically came off with the same thing that Kelly said, just kind of, like, nailed it in harder, was, why not start now? Just do it. So the next day I went to the convention. I said, I'm supposed to tell people that I'm a speaker and I'm a coach. And instead of people, like, rolling their eyes and be like, oh, sure, that must be nice that you just decided yesterday you're going to do that. Everybody was like, yes, that's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I remember meeting you after you met with Kelly. That was our first interaction. And you were, like, on cloud 57. There was no nine about it. And I remember you saying to me, guess what I just did? And I said, what? You went, I'm going to be a coach. And I went, that's awesome. I said, aren't you a beach body? And you went, yeah, no, I'm going to be a motivational coach and a speaker. And I was like, that is awesome, because it was so you, and personality and job description just, like, clicked together. It was fantastic. And I remember saying to you, that's awesome. What are you going to do first? You're like, I think I'm going to do a mindset course or some sort of speaking thing. And I just had this, like, voice yelling in my head going, you have to sign up for that. That's why I was like, I'm in. where do I sign? How do we do this? So it just, everything for you on that day from the outside looking in was like all these pieces of your crazy puzzle, which I relate to very well, just sort of like came together and clicked into place. And you're like, this is what I'm doing and this is where I'm going. And it was just so awesome to sit back and go, yes, you are. Let's do this.
It was a little piece of me that wanted to fix people. And I don't mean that like the people that I work with are awful and they need somebody to fix them. I mean it like some people need support and they need guidance. Yeah. And they need somebody to hold their hand and they need somebody to cheer them on and say, no, no, you got this. Like, seriously, I'm here. We're going to do this. Let's figure this out. Versus, you know, sitting there and feeling like you're alone and overwhelmed and stressed and life is chaotic and you have no idea what the hell you're doing. It can be hard. I help people get their stuff together. And then because I'm trying not to swear on the podcast because I have a potty mouth. But I do. Because I've been there where I didn't know who I was. I was disconnected. I didn't know who I was and I didn't start finding who I was because I 3 years ago, I saw myself as a mom and a Navy wife. That's what I saw myself as. I didn't know who Megan was. Who was she? What is she like? What did she like doing? All I talked about were my kids and my husband because I had nothing to talk about myself. It wasn't until about 2 years ago, when I was introduced to Beachbody, I started figuring out what I liked and who I actually was. And it wasn't until the past year that I really honed in on that. Like, now there's like, no, I don't know who I am. I'm like, I know who I am. I know what colors I like. I know what I like to do. I know like what I like to watch. I know what I don't like. And I know what I don't like in other people. But I do know what I like in other people. And I know when people aren't my people. I can tell you, as soon as I meet them, I'm like, that's not my person.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. It's not like that person's bad. It's that I know that I will not mesh well with them.
Yes.
I have a strong personality.
But that's really important to know in life as well, because you'll have people that are fabulous for you and will stand by you and watch you fail and watch you grow and still be there at the end of the day. And you have those people around you that will say that they support you, but realistically they're standing back and they're like rooting for you to fail so that you can be just as miserable. And it's a really dangerous area to, like, I don't know, to sort of be in, because those people, when you go to them and say, you know, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm struggling with, I want you to sit back and, you know, accept me for where I am at and where I'm going. Are we okay as friends? And they turn and look you straight in the face and say, absolutely. But you know full well, very deep down, that that's not the case. And I unfortunately learnt that this year, and I have actually had like a lonely sort of 4 or 5 months. But I remember sitting with you and just saying, I know that they're not my people, but you have the people that you're friends with for a reason, a season and a lifetime. And it's the lifetime people that you'll only have that small number to actually like solidify your friendships and have them for life. And sometimes they're rare to find, and sometimes you walk into a meeting and she's sitting right next to you.
Yay! My counselor pointed out, because I had a hard time with, I've always had a hard time with friendships. I always have.
Yep.
Because I expected that everybody was going to be that little bit, like that little tiny bit that you're talking about, the lifetime friends. She said, think of it like a target. You have like the bullseye, and that's your really close-knit friends, family, you know, people that know you and accept you for you, and those are your people. And the next bullseye, these are fun people. You enjoy hanging out with them. You would consider them friends, but you wouldn't tell them your whole life story. You wouldn't share, like, deep secrets about yourself because it's not appropriate, but they're fun. And then the next ones are the people that you can take in small doses. I really like seeing you at the submarine birthday ball, but I am not going to have wine with you. That's not going to happen. You know, and then the next one, you know, it goes on and so forth. The next one would be the people that you don't really like, but if they're around, you're not going to be totally turned off. And then, you know, it goes so on and so forth. You get to the people that they can't even be like within a, like 100 feet radius of you, or else your soul gets sucked out pretty much. You know, those people exist, and the reason I struggled so much with relationships was because I didn't know who I was. And I thought that I had to be what everybody else wanted me to be. And I couldn't foster true connections or relationships because you can't if you're not yourself. It, as much as authenticity is a buzzword now, it's true. If you're not authentic with who you are, you can't build true relationships. I can tell you right now, my husband and I have a lot of work to do in our marriage because of that very thing. Like, him and I both didn't even know who we were, and not saying that we were trying to keep things from each other, but when you don't know who you are, it's hard to have a true relationship with people around you if you don't.
Yeah, and that's where Chris and I, although we've been together since we were like 15 and 16, it's one of those things that he's actually realized in the last 6 months that I've grown and changed and stepped into myself. And I said to him, there was a Modern Femme question that came up the other day, and it was, where did you see yourself as like an 18-year-old to where are you now? And I remember sitting there writing a response and saying, I could not see life past the age of 18. I just, there was nothing that I could fathom that would happen after that age. And I've been literally lost for, I don't know, what are we up to? Nearly 14 years or so. And I remember just sitting there and thinking, like, why is this happening and what's going on? And I actually stood back, thanks to Amy Ladder, saying, when you have these feelings, actually address them and come in from a different angle and try and work out why that pattern is there. And I realized that I've allowed people to verbally, emotionally, and spiritually abuse me for so long. And it really, really hit home on that day that, you know, all of this growth that's been happening, I never picked up those bags and went, yep, they're here. This is what's happened the last X amount of time. And I noticed that it was starting to happen in my business, and I was allowing it to step into the business now. So that afternoon, I had a few cleanup calls, as Rach calls them, my Rachel Scott, and I made them, and I said to the people, this isn't working for me. This is not how I want to run my business, and this is not how I want my clients to be treating me. And one of them I had to let go, but the other one is now one of my best clients, and things have changed for the better, and hopefully that continues. But it had to be me stepping up and saying, no more, I'm done. Like, this is where we're going. And I think a lot of people don't realize just how much, like, your past can impact your mindset and your feelings going forwards. And if there's things happening that you're not really happy about, you need to kind of look at what have you been attracting previously, or the bags that are still sitting around you that need to go, but you haven't addressed them yet.
Yeah, you need to set those boundaries. I tell my clients that all the time, like, set boundaries, because if you give an inch, and it's not that because people are inherently evil and they want to take advantage of you. We all have our own stuff going on in our mind. I describe it like this. You have a closet in your mind, and every time you don't actually work through anything and come to closure with something, you pack it away in that closet until you have so much baggage one day, it doesn't even have to be anything related to whatever's in that closet. It'll all come tumbling out.
Yeah. So absolutely.
You have to work through it and realize people aren't inherently evil, but if you don't set those boundaries and say no and stand up for yourself, they're going to bulldoze you.
It's like my cousin John said to me, you know, if you don't address your subconscious or you try and bury it, he's like, it will come back and it will bury you tenfold. I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, as soon as you start stepping into the motivation mindset and actually stepping into what people call like the light, he's like, you can't go back. He goes, it will bury you whether you want it to or not. He said, it just, that's what happens. And he said, it will be really rough. Like you said to me, it's going to be rough for the first few months of doing this. But once you start letting go of bags, and, you know, they're small to start with, but often when you start digging deeper, they get bigger and they get heavier and nastier and darker, but they're also like fewer and farther between. So it's worth doing it. Every minute is worth doing it, because then you stop allowing other people to determine what you're doing and how you're doing it, which is what I learned with you. Like, you just would say to me, why are you allowing this to happen? Or, you know, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And I'd have to go, nothing really. You're like, so go and do it. I'm like, okay. Yeah, all right. But it's those important lessons that a lot of people aren't taught or don't learn. It's not really a skill set that gets taught at school, or some parents don't realize that, so it's never passed down to their children. And although my mum and dad always said to me, you can do anything you put your mind to, I allowed other people in my life to tell me otherwise. So I didn't necessarily believe that in myself from a really young age. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Every relationship in our lives makes a difference. So they say you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, which is pretty accurate if you think about it. Now, I would say I spend the most time with my kids. But if you think about outside your family, outside of your immediate family, the friends, coworkers, who are you surrounding yourself with? Who are these people? Are these people lifting you up, making you feel better? Are these people that are tearing you apart and making you feel bad about yourself and making you remember those negative self-talks that you have been saying for years? Because the problem is, and this is what Katie, co-founder of Modern Femme, said. She told me when we were talking about authenticity, she said, when you pretend to be something you're not, when people call you out on it, it hurts twofold. It hurts because they recognize that you're faking it. And it hurts because of whatever they're saying. So for me, I was on the receiving end many, many, many times of people being just nasty and downright mean to me. And it was because they could sense that I wasn't being myself. So they preyed on that. Not on purpose. Nobody purposely saying, I realize that she's weak and I'm going to take advantage of her. But it helps them feel better about themselves. Unhappy people make other people unhappy because they don't feel alone.
Mm.
When we are unhappy, we want others to be unhappy. Not on purpose. We're not like, oh yes, I'm going to make everybody unhappy. But we do it to not feel alone. Because misery loves company. It loves to have that person going, I'm having, yes, I feel you. I hate that person too. How dare that? You know?
Yeah. And as soon as you're happy, they then go, oh, she's too good for us now.
Yes.
So they still try and drag you back down, no matter where you're at.
My key things that I tell my clients all the time, and this is where the disconnect from Beachbody, just to wrap it all around and wrap it up, because I know we're running out of time, is, and we will talk forever. Don't worry, guys. You will get more podcasts with us talking to each other because it's just fun. But to wrap it all up, the disconnect with Beachbody is it was only focusing on, as much as I tried to say, you should get personal development in and you should do this, there was a disconnect because they were focusing on weight loss. They were focusing on working out and eating right, but they weren't focusing on what do my relationships look like? Who am I surrounding myself with? Because the community and who you surround yourself with is huge. What am I saying to myself in my head? Like, what am I allowing other people to say to me? And what am I saying to myself? And are people talking to me like I'm somebody they love? Am I talking to myself like somebody I love? Or are people tearing me apart? Because that's just going to make things worse. That just feeds into that whole emotional eating and all of that. What's your self-care look like? Yeah, you're working out and you're eating right, but are you sleeping right? Are you always on the go and never taking time for yourself, but and then burning out and getting sick because you're not taking care of yourself? What does that look like? What is the self-care? Because people think self-care, they think, I got to do CrossFit and eat paleo. And I just use those two as examples because they're kind of extremes. You know, there's nothing wrong with CrossFit and paleo, but I'm saying those are extremes when people think about working out and eating. That's what they're thinking. Or they'll think vegan, too. That's another extreme. But people think it has to be extreme. They're not thinking of little things like, am I making sure that I have time with my girlfriends every week? Am I making sure that I have time to enjoy myself and watch TV? Yes, I know successful people will tell you that TV is the devil. I will tell you right now, TV is my time to zone out and be a complete potato. There's nothing. I don't think about anything. I just
that's me
out.
Too.
And it makes me happy. Like, I need that downtime. You know, So we have self-care, we have community, we have the people, the things that you're saying to yourself and what others are saying to you, and how you're treating other people. The final piece is, what in your life is holding you back from being happy? Ask yourself, and people don't want to admit they're not happy unless they're very, very unhappy, and then they'll tell everybody they're unhappy. But generally, people don't want to admit that they're unhappy with their life. But what is holding you back? Is it that job you're working? Jobs don't have to be forever. And you don't, just because you've been there forever and you're like, man, I could retire from here. But do you really want to put yourself through that stress for the next 10 years so you can retire? It's probably not going to be worth it on your health. What does your life look like? Is it a hot freaking mess where you're always overwhelmed and have way too much to do? How can you pare that down? Who's going to help you create these habits every day? I am.
But that's right. And you do it, and you do it bloody well.
Thank you.
I find now I don't have those voices in my head. I still notice little bits, but now I can say to people, like, I'm a talented designer. Whereas at Modern Femme, I could tell people I was good or I was skilled, because to me a skill was something I could learn. So it wasn't a natural thing. And it's, 6 or 7 months down the track, and I can actually look people in the eye and say, I'm good at what I do, and I'm talented at what I do, and I'm worthy of what I'm doing. Like, it's taken a lot of hard work, but hard work also looks like not actually physically doing the designing, but it's the hard work for your head and everything else that needs to be in place for you to go forwards.
Because it's not going to be an overnight thing. You are working on years and years and years of habits. And when I say habits, it doesn't mean you workout habit. I mean, like, how do you talk to yourself? How do you relate to other people? When somebody says something, you go one way or the other. Okay. When somebody says something that upsets you, people either get very angry, or actually it could be three ways: very angry, shuts down, or just decides to just be like, I don't care. Like, you're fine. But when you get triggered, you've created a habit of reacting a certain way to other people. When I say habits and routines, I mean those habits as well. Like, what are you saying to yourself when you mess up? Like, that's a habit. What do you say to other people when something happens? That's a habit. What do you do when somebody cuts you off in the freeway? Maybe you're like me and you flick them off and scream profanities. That's a habit. That's a habit I probably should try to remedy. Instead, I just really like to scream profanities, so it just gets that out. But, you know, that's a habit. And when we think about habits and routines, that's what we have to think about. It's not just what time do I wake up in the morning, and do I brush my teeth, and, you know, do I create a schedule? Those are all fine and dandy, and I help people realize those are important. But the real work comes, like, what are you doing when you get in an uncomfortable situation? Are you like me, where I used to drink my face off until I couldn't feel that I was uncomfortable anymore? I was so numb. But I know, and instead, now I know if I'm in a very uncomfortable situation, I should not drink at all.
Yes.
Because I have that habit of one wine turns into two wine, and it turns into two bottles of wine, and then I'm drunk off my face and embarrassing everybody. It's not a good idea.
But you also know now that you can remove yourself from that situation without having the emotional backlash that you used to give yourself.
Yeah, not just me, but other people would give me. Now if people get angry because I leave someplace and they're like, oh, thanks for leaving, I'm like, sorry, but not sorry, because I'm taking care of myself. We are the number one priority in our lives, and people will argue with me all day, every day about that, because they have kids, they have a spouse, they have people they care about. But if you don't take care of yourself, you cannot take care of the people in your life.
Okay, so what does authenticity mean to you now?
Being 100% you. That doesn't mean, like, if you are in a situation and you're uncomfortable, not pretending to be something you're not. It's not showing up at my husband's new command whenever they get here and pretending to be the perfect Navy wife, because I'm not. I'm not the perfect Navy wife. Nobody is. And I will give you that right now. I'm going to show up as a kick butt
business owner.
A freaking positive, happy, bubbly, I'm going to make you want to vomit person. Because I am that. I am. 95% of the time, this is me. Unless I'm really sick. This is me. Katie once time said, she said, Megan will be like this at 9 a.m. and at 11 p.m. tonight.
Like, and I've seen it.
It just goes on. And that's just me. Yeah. And I hid that for so long because I thought, like, oh, people will think that's too much. Who cares? They're not my people. I'm not going to show up there and, you know, be like, I am the amazing mom and I got it together. And people say, you know, you have four kids. How do you do it? I do. And I do it imperfectly every day. But that's okay. And I embrace that. It's not being authentic. It's not pretending to be something you're not. It's embracing who you are inside and out, the flaws, the craziness, the hot freaking mess, and know that that's okay. That's you. Embrace it.
Okay, so how do you make time for self-care, and what is your biggest struggle as a modern woman?
I totally rock at self-care. I do. part of it is I schedule it out. I make sure that in my schedule every day that I have time to work out. And if I notice that I'm having a particularly crazy day, I give myself permission not to work out. I also am huge on going to bed early and getting enough sleep because our good day starts the night before. But my biggest struggle as a modern woman right now would be, how do I figure out to make this all work together as a cohesive unit? I'm struggling right now with, my husband's about to come home, and in 6 months, I have completely changed. I've come into my own. I've started a business, which was just a little tingly idea when he left 6 months ago. I have this community of amazing people. I have this life, and now I need to make sure that he can be a part of it too.
Okay, so share one tip for creating positive relationships with others.
I rock at this too. No. Yeah. I rock at this now. I didn't always rock at this. But I will say, every relationship, you need to be honest and open with your conversations and communications. That does not mean you come at your husband when he comes home late from work. And mind you, mine always does, because that's just in the nature of the beast. That, I can't believe you weren't here. I had plans. How dare you? Instead, you come at, I understand that you had to work late, and I really appreciate how hard you work. But when you don't let me know and I have plans, that really hurts me. And I feel like I'm not important too. And you know what they're going to come at? If you're married to a decent person, or even if it's a decent relationship, the person's going to come back at, wow, I'm sorry you feel that way, and clarify what happened. Brené Brown likes to say, tell them the crappy first draft that you have of your story. This is what I'm feeling right now. This is the story I'm telling myself in the head, my head. You know, and I actually did that to my husband the other day. I was like, this is the story I'm telling myself in the head, my head, because I haven't heard from you in a while, and I feel like you don't care. Because I know you could talk to me, but you're not. And come to find out, something came up and happened, and I didn't know anything about it. And if I hadn't said that, I would have held on to those feelings and been resentful of him. But because he was able to clarify that, I'm not resentful.
Yeah, that's my biggest problem, especially being Navy spouse. I get exactly where you're coming from, that it's how you're generating people in your mind. I used to generate Chris is thinking this and Chris is doing that, and his actions were matching my story, because when you have that story in your head, your mind will go out and try and find proof of information and research to back that up, and that then becomes a belief in your head. So like you, now I have to sit back and think, why am I thinking this? Or why did I just pick a fight with him for no reason whatsoever? Like, and then I can go back to him and say, I'm really sorry that I got mad. This is what's going on in my mind. And he'll often say to me, I'm not a mind reader, Jules. Just tell me if I'm not doing something, or if I've done something, or if you're having these crazy stories going on up there, he's like, come and tell me. Like, I need to hear that. And literally, like, the last, I'd probably say 3 to 4 months, a lot of those stories have gone, and our relationship is probably better than it was when we were teenagers and didn't really care about the rest of the functioning world that was going on. So it's, yeah, it's a big thing to be able to do that. All right, what is a motto that you live by?
You can't pour from an empty cup. That's my favorite one. I say that like all the time because it goes for everything that I do. It like describes everything I do with my clients. Like, you're overwhelmed and stressed and your life's chaotic. You can't pour from an empty cup. It starts with you. Like, if you're constantly on the go, you're constantly giving to others, as much as it's good to give to others, you also have to think about you.
Mm-hmm.
You are your number one priority. And I don't care. People can argue, send me emails. It's fine. InspiredWomenPodcast@gmail.com. Send me emails. It's fine. And argue with me about this. But I will tell you right now, if you don't take care of yourself and you run on empty, it's going to affect every other area of your life.
And you will lash out and you will fight and you will just react with everything that you do.
Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And I hope that you'll tune in. We have some people that we find very inspirational in our lives coming to talk to you, but you also hear a lot from Jules and I as well.